You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Come on around back, Arizona. It is the fourth Saturday of the month, and it's the 8 o'clock hour. That means we have Farmer Greg joining us in the house to talk about all things urban farming. And Greg, I pulled this out of Thursday's Wall Street Journal. Listen to this. Cattle futures jump unexpected on unexpected Asian demand, up 14% since September 10th.
Wow.
Beef prices up 14% in basically 5 weeks.
Yeah.
But that's why we bring in every month to talk about urban farming, growing our own, and creating a more local and sustainable food source right here in the great state of Arizona.
There you go. You know, you can actually grow your own cattle. You can grow your own chickens. You can grow your own pigs. If you have a little bit bigger lot here in Phoenix, you can actually do that. I've never done cows and pigs, but I've done chickens. About a decade ago, I figured since I'm not a vegetarian full-time, I'm vegetarian about 98% of the time, but sometimes I ate poultry, and I figured, you know what? I'm just going to figure out what this takes. And so I raised, over the course of about 3 years, we raised 25 hens that were meat birds. They're very different. Meat birds are very different than laying hens.
And were those like the Cornish cross? Do you remember the name of the breed?
That's exactly what I was raising, Cornish cross. And they go from chick, the little peepers things about the size of a baseball, to harvestable at 6 pounds in 8 weeks.
And you pretty much are forced to have to harvest at that speed because their body grows so fast.
Right.
Their legs can't support them.
Exactly.
And they just...
Won't live
much past that.
Right. Once the clock starts with them, it's, you got a butcher day coming up. And I was much more of a vegetarian on the other end of that. And I very much appreciate, what Dave, we used to call him Dave the Eggman up,
In New River, yeah.
In New River. I think he does meat birds now. But I very much appreciate what farmers do to make clean meat for us. And there are bunches of them in the state. We just have to find them. And, if you're a little bit motivated, you can do that yourself.
And for everything you said, that's why I rely on Tyson or, Butterball for chicken, just because that you have to harvest so quick. And I didn't always have time to harvest when it needed to be, and we would lose our crop. And I found it a lot easier to section off a quarter of the property and feed a steer. It doesn't matter if he's, 16 months or 18 months. If I've got a window there before it works in my schedule, all I'm out's a little bit on feed. But it's not like I lose him because I'm not keeping up with how fast these meat chickens grow and their harvest schedule. So anyway, I'm kind of deterring us off of
the topic
of today. We're not talking meat. It's possible.
We're talking urban orcharding, which is, different. And, recently I've come up with this idea, possibility of what if everybody had a fruit tree in their front yard in Phoenix?
That would be pretty incredible.
Call it front yard fruit trees. And there are so many fruit trees that grow really well here and produce really well. We'll get to that. But, there's so many choices. It's like, what do you love? I have in my front yard, I think I have 12 navel or navel-like oranges, and I have 14 on the property. Why do I have that many? Because when they're, when they're ripe, I'm eating 4 to 6 a day myself.
And when you said if everyone had one fruit tree on their front porch or front lot, just picture a street and then everyone pick a different fruit tree.
Exactly.
So you've got this huge variety right there in your neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, you only need one lemon tree on a street, maybe two, you only need one lime tree on a street. Yeah, maybe a half a dozen peach trees would be good. 3 or 4 apple trees on a street, yeah. You could.
I've contemplated it before and mentioned it just in big picture theory. We've got citrus as such a staple of, one of the 5 C's of Arizona.
Yeah.
And such a big producer. It's a consistent producer year after year.
Yep.
Doesn't need a rely on bees for pollination. What would have happened to, the ho-ho-cum and the tribes of Casa Grande that disappeared in the 1100s if citrus had just gotten here a couple hundred years earlier.
There you go.
How would that have changed the whole makeup of our history? Yeah. Interesting thing to ponder.
Yeah, there you go. But they are high water use. Fruit trees are high water use. And so there's strategies, which we can talk about in the second or third segment. There's strategies for success to make sure that you're not spending all your water allotment on the fruit trees.
So they would have needed citrus and dams.
There you go. Exactly. Well, and that's part of the reason I went with flood water on my property. You know, 30 years. I've been in my house 30 years now. I'm near 16th Street in Bethany Home. And the number one reason I bought that house is because it has flood water.
You're flood on irrigation. SRP district.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, if you can find one of those properties, they are premier.
Yeah.
Those flood irrigation properties are phenomenal.
Yeah, if you want to grow food, get a flood water property.
And you can sit there and look down a street and know this side's flood, this side's not.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So today we're talking about urban orcharding and what is urban orcharding. And the big thing is fruit trees, you know, an apple tree, a peach tree, a plum tree, apricots, citrus, they can easily get 30, 35 feet tall with a 20 to 30 foot diameter footprint on them. And in our yards, we generally don't have the capability of managing a tree that size. Plus, a peach tree that's that size is going to give you 300, 400, 500, 600 pounds of peaches in a two-week period.
I was going to say the harvest time on peach would be hard. That's the nice thing about citrus is, you know, you've got a multi-month harvest period, but peaches, it's now or nothing, baby.
Exactly, exactly. So in urban orcharding, we really encourage people to keep the trees small, no more than about 8 or 10 feet tall, with a footprint of 6 foot diameter, so that you can actually harvest it by standing on the ground. You walk up to it, you can harvest everything off of it. I have a perfectly pruned 8 foot tall peach tree in my front yard, and I get 50, 60 pounds of peaches in a two-week period. For Heidi and I and my mom and, you know, some friends, that's plenty of peaches. You have plenty of peaches doing it that way. So keeping trees small accomplishes several things. First of all, we can easily manage the trees. You know, if you're going to net them for birds, you want to use something called tulle, T-U-L-L-E. You get it at the fabric store. You never want to use bird netting. Bird netting tangles mercilessly in the tree, and it kills birds. So by keeping a tree small to 8 feet, you can cover it with tulle when the fruit's starting to ripen, so it doesn't need to be all season, just a couple, 3 weeks. They're easier to manage and prune when you keep them small. Plus, there's a bonus, and that bonus is called successive ripening. So with peaches, I have a bundle of peaches that we sell through our fruit tree program that includes a desert gold peach, a tropic snow peach, and a mid-pride peach. And they consecutively ripen. So the desert gold...
I get what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
The desert gold peach ripens in mid-May. The tropic snow peach is like mid-early June, and the mid-pride peach is late June, early July.
So you expand your harvest time.
Right. And the thing is, in that same 25-foot diameter footprint that a standard-sized tree fits into, I can put 6 different varieties of peaches, which would ripen in a window starting at the beginning of May all the way to the beginning of July at different times, successive ripening. So by keeping the trees small, they're easier to manage, they're easier to cover, they're easier to prune, and you can put multiple trees in the same space.
And these are individual trees. These aren't like those cocktail trees where
Correct.
They try and graft on
Yep.
3 different varieties to one rootstock. These are 3 individual trees.
Exactly.
Which you don't see a lot of that cocktail as much like you when it first came out. I think everyone figured out that just wasn't.
It's not a great thing, and here's why. Often what happens is one of the varieties will grow excessively. It grows quickly. And if you're not out there pruning that thing every month or so and managing the size of the different ones that are growing, it'll take over the tree. And within 3 or 4 years, you just have a tree that is a single variety, not your three varieties anymore. So if you're getting a cocktail citrus tree and there's a lemon, a lime, and an orange on there, if you're not out there doting over that tree, managing it.
That lime's going to take it over.
Or the lemon, right. Exactly. One of them will grow so voraciously quickly that it's just going to take it over, and good luck.
So plant the trees individually. If you want those three different varieties, plant three different trees. And
exactly.
Like you said, you don't need massive amounts of space.
Right. Yeah. So one of the ways, there's over 40 fruit trees in my front yard. And my front yard is my yard is a third of an acre. It's 80 feet wide and 160 feet deep. And my front yard is 80 feet wide and about 40 foot deep. And I have over 40 fruit trees in my front yard. And I put them in hedges. I put them in hedgerows. So all the way across, right, there's the street. And then there's my yard. The edge of my yard, and then I put 14 navel oranges right across the front of the property. It creates a nice privacy fence. It grows a lot of food. That grows most of my citrus that I need.
And it's amazing how trees have an ability to regulate themselves. Yeah. Where, you know, it's not like you're constantly out there having to trim them back, trim them back, trim them back. When they're planted close, they've got their sensors in the leaves and in the roots to not grow beyond this, because this is all the space I have.
Right. So those are in hedges. And one of the things that does happen, though, is they'll grow tall.
There's your privacy screen.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're talking about urban orcharding with Farmer Greg here at Rosie on the House. We talk urban farming the fourth Saturday of every month and rotate through topics. And we'll take a quick break here and come back and continue on our fruit tree talking chill hours and rootstocks and ripening times and viability, and the pop-up orchard is opening up. It opened up yesterday.
Yesterday.
And what time do you open up today?
Well, we're open at 9 today.
So 40 minutes, you'll be open up.
Yep, exactly.